Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I planted a tree that eats other trees. It is a California oak wood. It's a giant 9.5 feet tall tree. When you plant it, it grows to 462 feet. Also, I bought a coal-burning toaster. Yeah. We're spending way too much on electricity. Why not invest in coal to use your toaster? It takes, like, you know, 96 pieces of coal to, you know, toast a bagel. Half a bagel. Because you got to flip it. So I'm not good at math, but, you know, a little less than 200 pieces to toast the full thing.
But it's a delicious bagel. Oh. Once it's got the taste of coal
in it. You get the smoky flavor of coal up in that bagel. You throw in a little schmear.
It's like eating a burger, like a cookout burger, without the meat or the cheese or any of the condiments that normally you remember in a cookout burger.
And then, you know, throw some gasoline on it, and then you got your taste.
Yeah.
Delicious. Delicious.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If he's a Renaissance man, I'm a Madonna and child with eggplants. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Play that again. Wait a second. Come on. Come on there. Wakey, wakey. Wakey, wakey. You're late. You're late this morning. You overslept. It's daylight saving time.
I wasn't late. I was actually early. It kind of worked opposite on me.
I just want to scare the heck out of people here.
They've already been like, did you hate waking up like that? With like that cold fear in your chest? Like, where am I? What am I doing? I hate that.
I woke up every 10 minutes from about 4 o'clock on today thinking, wait, is it earlier or is it? No, I know I'm supposed to sleep later, but.
I threw down with the microwave clock because, like, I set the bedroom clock because I've got a cool clock where it just has that plus one, minus one switch on the back.
See, here's my problem. I use my cell phone. Mm. And last week I lost my cell phone.
That's a problem.
Which is a really stupid thing to do. I have no, it just disappeared. And I was in the house. And, well, I did go out once, but who knows?
It's somewhere
along the way in a 3-hour period, it disappeared forever with all of my contact numbers.
That's bad.
And that's because I had a really cheap phone that didn't have a SIM card and didn't have Bluetooth hook up to the computer. So you know what? Look what I did.
You remedied that, didn't you? That's a fun new toy you have there, Mr.
I
Novak.
I broke that. I have a smartphone. Oh, God, I love my smartphone.
I'm not investing in one until the children in my life are substantially older.
and I'm scrolling, and I'm taking pictures. Yeah.
Are you going to be like one of those people in the commercial where they're like throwing this stuff at going like, really? Are you going to have like your nose in your smartphone like 24/7 now?
I don't know.
Are we going to forget what the color of your eyes are?
No, you forget the color of my nose.
Right.
I don't know. I don't.
No, it'll be a little pink on the edge. You'll burn it from the radiation coming off that little screen.
I hope not. But right now, it's cool.
I'm jealous. I want a smartphone. I do.
Well, I broke down because I said, I'm not losing 300 phone numbers again.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to go through this again. So, and by the way, all my friends out there who know my cell number, call me.
Yeah.
because I need to put the number in. And do you know how hard it is?
Make sure the ringer's off on that thing. I've got the ringer off.
In fact, start calling me during the show. I want to see how many. I want to see. I'll tell you at the end of the show how many people have called me during the show. Maybe we should just leave the ringer on. It could be kind of fun. So all the people who know that I have your cell, well, this is a reason for them not to call me because they don't want me to have their cell numbers
in. Right, see, they can work two ways.
But
it's so much
easier if you call in and then I don't have to.
Yeah, don't call me, call Mike.
So here's my number, 773, oh wait, no, I'm not giving that out.
No.
But if you want to call me, leave me a message on my new cell phone. It's still the old number. And help me out because I got to reconstruct about 300 phone numbers. So.
That's so, what another incredible convenience of having your own radio show. I lost my cell phone.
Well, don't most people send out a little email to go?
I know, there's no email. There's no, you know, no, I'm going to shoot it out over the radio airwaves for the world.
They send out an email.
Jealous,
oh, gosh,
now.
I lost my cell phone. Please send me your number. And I'm just like, hey, on my radio show, call me now. 773, blah, blah, blah. And leave a message so that I can. Of course, now I'm going to realize how many friends I really have.
Right.
When I get no calls in two hours. but that, you know, the truth hurts.
We'll check at 10 o'clock.
All right. Well, listen, pop that Twitter screen back up there. I love my Twitter friends. I got to tell you, when I first started on Twitter, I said, this is not going to work. This thing, who knows why this thing even exists. Mm-hmm. But for a radio guy and quick bursts of communication, every Sunday I have my friends who tweet and say hi at 9 a.m. This morning, Kathy's Garden wrote, she gave me a follow. Wait, it's a no, gratitude and garden blessings to a bunch of us. Including me. Thank you, Kathy's Garden. I don't even know if you're listening. We should tweet back to Kathy's Garden.
Okay.
Wait, not yet. Let me read. And then Zamboni wrote, good morning. Testing a new scone recipe during Mike Now at 9 a.m. Setting out banana, fresh apple sauce, sour cream, eggs, flour now. Hey, let's go over to Zamboni's afterward.
Really? I'll bring coffee.
Yeah. Can you bring some here, Zamboni?
Yeah. Ooh.
My Skinny Garden wrote, when I tweeted last night before I went to bed about the guest we're having in the second hour, a woman who's teaching a course called Farm Dreams. Have you ever wanted to be a farmer? Well, Tracy Hall, who is from Angelic Organics Learning Center, is going to be here, and she's on the Good Growing segment at 10:45 on the Mike Novak Show. It's our brand new segment. This is our second week. We got a call coming in.
Uh-huh,
call's pouring in. But they called the station number, not mine.
Maybe they left their phone.
I don't think anybody's called me yet to leave the new cell number. So, and anyway, My Skinny Garden wrote, that should be fun. Sometimes I have farm dreams. So I love my Twitter friends here, and I don't, you know, I love it when you call, too, 773-838-9278. I love it when you write something on Facebook. This I love all the technology. I got my new smartphone, and there we have it. And on the show today, we're going to start with Erica Dornfeld from Faith and Place. We're going to be talking about Chicago winter farmers markets. Guess what? Just because it is the winter doesn't mean that you can't get fresh produce and cool stuff that you got at your farmers markets. I've been meaning to do this for a couple of years, actually, because I get their emails, and I thought, okay, let's get ahead of the curve for once. That's not a position I'm used to being in. And we'll talk to Erica and get you prepared for the winter's farm markets, because it's kind of it's a roadshow. It goes to different places at different times. Rick DeMaio weather at 9:30 or thereabouts, once again, at 10 o'clock, just after 10 o'clock. Amy Stewart, my friend Amy Stewart, she's been on the show a couple of times. She's one of the garden rant women, and she's written a book, and it's not new. And we should have done this last week because it's called Wicked Plants. All right, you're going to like this. This is really fun. Wicked Plants, subtitled The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. What you're going to discover is that plants are out to get us. Now, you probably already knew that, but even more so, you're going to learn this on the show. It's actually kind of scary. How many plants are poisonous? How many are hallucinogenics? How many are invasive and crazy and will tear down your garage? That kind of thing. So Amy Stewart's on right after 10. And then, as I said before, in the good growing segment at 10:45, Tracy Hall from Angelic Organics Learning Center is going to talk about a class that she's going to be teaching called Farm Dreams, Assessing Risks and Resources to Start a Small Farm or Market Garden. How cool is that? I didn't realize that you could actually take courses in there. I always figured, like me, you stumble onto things. We got people on the line. Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what. Let's before we get to Erica, let us go to line two and talk to George. George, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for you, but I also had a comment. You want me to give you the comment first?
Yeah, give me the comment first.
All right. This is something that I hope that the earlier folks that were on were talking about, whether or not President Obama got it.
Uh-huh.
This is what I think it should be. I know the corporate media thinks it should be death reduction and deregulation, but, which is not what the American people want. I think what you got to remember is every newly employed American is another tax-paying soldier in the war on the deficit. And they need to couch the whole argument as jobs, not gridlock. And if we stick to that message and stick to that narrative, the corporate media's narrative, which is the Fox News narrative, which have melded in the last 2 years, won't matter because people in America want jobs. And mm-hmm. that's the bottom line. I hope people take away that and call their representatives, especially their Republican representatives and the Republican senators, and tell them we want jobs, not gridlock.
Well, you know what?
That's my question, sir, because you are the expert.
Well, I was going to just, and then let me make a real quick comment on that, too. And it's kind of interesting because now in Illinois, do you live in Illinois?
I'm in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, you're in Gary. So you've got Republican senator, a new Republican senator. We have a new Republican senator.
Oh, a new former Republican senator, also former lobbyist,
right.
who came back to be a senator because of the new corporate friendly media.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, for those progressives in Illinois, now you have the chance to lobby a Republican senator. We haven't had a chance to do that in a long time. You know, whenever I would get these notices, they would say, contact your senator. And I'd realize, well, you know what? Dick yeah. Durbin and whoever was in, you know, whether it was Obama or...
If we flood the switchboards and the Senate switchboards, especially Mark Kirk, Dan Coats, Dick Lugar... You know, talking yeah. about our area.
All right, but you have a real...
Let those Republicans know, and let the new teabaggers that are in know, and let everybody know that the American people want jobs, not gridlock. We don't want investigations into who spent what on an airplane. We don't want investigations into how much money was spent on lunch programs in Dubuque. I want an investigation of what happened to all the money that was gone, but we'll figure that out after we fix the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But can I ask you a question about my garden?
You know how funny that sounds, but I hate politics in my life. And by the way, I got a question about my garden.
Yes. I know it's the end of the season, but I have a tomato garden.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's two things, but the main thing is the mole problem. Is there some... green method of getting rid of moles. I've tried the windmills. I've tried the thumper. I've tried a few different things. I just wonder if you've got any advice about that. Other than my cats in the yard, which help to keep them away, but they always seem to come to the perimeter and steal some of those roots somehow.
You mean so the cats kind of keep them at bay?
Right. But I still, like the perimeter of the garden, I still get the burrowing and I get, you know, what it seems like they're eating the roots and it kills the plant from bottom up.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's moles are a tough problem. Like, as I say in a lot of garden talks that I do and on the air, there's no silver bullets for getting rid of things. There are some repellent castor oil-based. Have you tried any of those?
That's something that I was told by a very kind elderly lady that I met at the supermarket a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
She said that you poke a hole in the ground and you pour castor oil in the hole. And I hadn't tried it yet, but now that I've heard you say it, I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. One other thing, too, real quickly. Here in Gary, Indiana, the topsoil is sort of a sandy, metally mix. And I was wondering how far down is it safe you know, how much of the topsoil should I scrape away before I actually start amending the soil and planting?
Wait. Say that again about your topsoil?
Well, here I'm right near the steel mills and stuff.
Yeah.
And I noticed that the topsoil, it's got sort of a silvery, rusty mix of it's kind of a gray, sandy mix.
Right. So you got very sandy soil there. Is what you're saying?
Well,
yeah.
Sandy and gray and sort of seems like it's heavy in metals. You know, if you hold it up and just let it out of your fingers in the sun, it sort of sparkles sometimes when it comes down.
Huh.
And I'm wondering what the safe depth is to scrape away before I start amending.
Well, that's a good question because, you know, normally when you're amending sandy soil, you'd probably just mix it right in. I mean, have you done a soil test?
No, that's I can barely afford the cell phone I'm talking about. That's why I'm gardening, pal.
Yeah, I understand. You try to grow your own. But the first thing is, all right, what I would do is, at first I would go to Extension in your area, Indiana Extension, and see if in your area...
Oh, like Purdue University or
something?
Yeah,
Purdue University, exactly.
Okay.
And talk to an Extension agent and ask them if in your area you have a problem, that it's known to have a problem, because I don't know about that particular soil. If there's some toxicity there, they will be aware of it and give you some advice. You know, if you got sandy soil, it probably goes down a bit. If there's not a toxicity problem, then you just start adding organic matter to the soil.
Okay, so my huge compost pile will go full bore into use in the spring.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Okay, I appreciate your help. One last thing real quick. I just want to warn your listeners that this week is the week that the corporate media is going to start reinventing George W. Bush. So if you want a little comedy, watch Matt Lauer's interviews with George W. Bush, where he's now become the elder statesman. Ha! How's that for a laugh? You guys have a great weekend.
You've made my day. Okay. He's right, though. Wait, let me get your mic on there.
No, I was joking with my friend that I guess he's working on a memoir. W.
Yeah.
W. And I told my friends, I'm like, are they going to keep that at the near the Charmin and the Quilted Northern at the store? Because we know what it's going to be full of.
Whoa.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh. Lies and
but
propaganda.
You're right, but you know, and that's what happens. He's making the victory lap now, and doing the, and it'll be, and he's right.
It
will be the reinvention of George Bush.
Gross.
Oh well, but that happens.
Tom Hartman, he should be in jail. He's guilty of war crimes. I don't even want to get on the Bush soapbox at all.
Let's talk gardening.
Yay!
There we go. Let's do some of that.
Plants are good.
Plants are good people, and there's somebody else calling.
Yes.
Why don't you grab that, and I will go to line one and bring in Erica Dornfeld. Erica, you know what? You ended up in the middle of a political controversy here.
That's all right.
How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. How are you?
I'm great. And Erica is here to talk about Faith in Place. She is with Faith in Place, and she's a congregational outreach and support for Faith in Place. And one of the things they do is have winter farmers markets. I'll get it out. And it's just because, as I said earlier, that it's winter doesn't mean you can't find fresh stuff. And you've been doing this for a while. How long have you been doing the winter farmers markets?
Well, Faith in Place has done them for about a year now. So we're in our second season. But they've been going on in Chicago for about 4 years.
All right. And how is it different? You know, you say they've been going on for 4 years. Well, what changed when Faith in Place got involved with this?
Well, the structure is by and large the same. It's just we're seeking a lot of different partners in the work maybe than before. And now there doesn't have to be a brunch with the market. There used to always be brunch included, but it's a little bit more flexible now is probably the major difference.
But the point is you do these at churches and synagogues, and you partnered with various faiths. Your list includes Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, Sikh. I mean, it goes on. And that's quite an umbrella you have there.
Yeah, our network is, I think, over, you know, 500 to 600 congregations these days, and so far the markets have been in largely a Christian setting, but Now that Faith in Place is doing the markets, we're hoping to really expand this program into our wider network of congregations.
Good. And, you know, that's, by the way, it's Erica Dornfeld with Faith in Place. And one of the things I did, Erica, is I put the list of places that, well, I put the links to your websites. And you've got several of these things coming up right away. If you want to get a sense of what a winter farmer's market is, and you sell a lot of the stuff that you would get during the summer. I looked at your list, and it's yarns, woolen goods and raw fibers, honey, preserves and fruit butters, fresh and dried herbs, apples and cider, dried fruits, mushrooms, pastries, breads, croissants and tarts, spa and beauty products, salsas, soups and sauces, sprouts and microgreens, cheese, yogurt. And, I mean, it just goes on. Fresh lettuce and greens, squash and root vegetables. So those people who have gotten their Jones on over the summer by having a CSA or going to the outdoor farmers markets can do the same thing during the winter, can't they?
Exactly. And we really try and have as much variety like you listed at these markets as possible to really give people access to those things that, you know, they see at the summer market.
Well, now somehow something's, how does this get paid for when you have these winters farm and you go any place more than once, or do you just rotate?
Well, we do try and rotate to really be equitable in our distribution of where these are, but some do run another market on their own. For example, one that's coming up here in Elgin, Faith in Place sponsors the one in November, and then they choose to do one on their own in March.
Ah.
Yeah, so it can depend, but we really try and spread them out as much as we can.
Well, I want to bring in somebody else on the line. I think word got out that you were going to be on the show, Erica, and Kaida, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike. Good morning.
I take it you're a friend of Erica's?
I'm a friend of Erica and Faith in Place, and I am so excited to hear you on the air this morning, Erica. Good morning. Happy Sunday.
Hi, Kaida.
Well, Kaida, since you're a friend and you know about Faith in Place, have you been to the farmers markets?
No, I have not attended their winter farmers market, but I definitely plan to support them this winter, and I'm hoping to come across some nice squashes and root vegetables to use some of these great recipes I have for squash and root vegetable soups. And I just wanted to give Erica a shout out and let her know that I got their newsletter. And I am really excited to hear her on your show this morning, Mike.
Well, I'm glad you're a friend. I'm glad that what we got to do is get you to one of those markets. I went to one of them last year, and Erica, you're right. There's a lot of different things. You can find plenty to be interested in and to put on your table, and not just your table. As you say, there's other kinds of goods that are sold there, bath and beauty aids and wool products and other things like that, textiles. And it's a great thing. Well, Kaida, thank you so much for calling
thank
and saying
you.
Hi.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
What I did, Erica, is on my website, I listed the first four, and you've got four through December 12th. Are those the only ones before Christmas, or are there going to be more?
Yeah, those are the only ones before Christmas, and in part, that's due to a lot of the summer markets are extending their seasons, you know, into October and even into December. And we really aren't trying to create overlap with existing markets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about giving as much access to local foods, you know, all year round. And if someone else is, you know, going through December in a certain area, like, that's great. You know, we're not seeking direct competition with any sort of summer program, just really trying to provide extra venues.
Well, that makes sense, total sense. You know, you want to do it when people can't get the goods, and I'd be interested in how successful farmers markets were this year, because this was as each year goes by, more and more people become aware that they exist, and you know, I got my very first CSA this year, and that was really cool,
mm-hmm.
and eating stuff that. I put some of this online on this week's show. I mean, among the things I had never eaten are Malabar spinach, kohlrabi, Bok choy, I know. No, actually, I've had bok choy because I love Thai food, but I hadn't cooked. Yeah. We hadn't cooked it at home. Kale, tat soy, and believe it or not, turnips. I mean,
they're definitely an education piece.
Yeah, and actually, turnips are. I put those in there, but we have them this week, and we're going to try a recipe. And that's the thing. You got to find a good recipe, something that makes sense. And then, and something that I had eaten before and I loved and I got back to this year was beets.
Oh, beets, yes.
Oh, my goodness, I love beets. And I didn't realize how much I enjoyed them until I hadn't had them for years and years and years. The first four, Faith in Place, Winter Farmers Markets, is there's one on November 13th. So that will be next Saturday at Church of the Holy Nativity at 9300 South Pleasant Avenue in Chicago. Then the next day, the 14th. Oh, and by the way, that's from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Then on the 14th. Now, you got a question mark there on your site. Is this still a question mark for the Unitarian Universal Church of Elgin?
No, that one's a go.
That's a go. All right. I will get the question mark out of there. That's 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. And that's at 39 West 830 Highland Avenue in Elgin, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Elgin. And then on December 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., is that Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember. Anyway.
That one is a Sunday.
Okay. That's North Shore Unitarian Church, 2100 Half Day Road in Deerfield. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then on December 12th, the First Evangelical Free Church at 5255 North Ashland Avenue in Chicago.
Yeah, and that's right around the corner from the Summer Andersonville Farmers Market.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, of course, 5200 North. Yeah, that's Foster Avenue.
Yep.
So I know exactly. Right, that's my old stomping grounds. So those are, and if you didn't get those down, you just go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. That's all listed there. I'm going to stop in at a couple this, and I will be honest with you, Erica. I'm not much of a religious guy, all right? But I just love the idea that these places are available. And there are other places you can go, like the Winter Farmers Market, the Green City Market, which goes indoors to Peggy Notabart, and I'm sure there's other things, other places.
Right. It's all about what's close to you, and you know, in your community, and they are definitely for the public as well. You know, they're free admission, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. You can come in and just browse if you want. You don't actually have to buy anything. It doesn't cost you anything to get in, right?
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, you can just come and look, see what's around, you know, visit with folks. There's usually, I mean, there's always coffee and a place to sit and just enjoy.
I mean, that's the other thing. You're right. That's the atmosphere is fun. It might be better than a coffee house because there's other things going on and people there with a single purpose. And they're real friendly, usually. Everybody's friendly and wants to chat. So, Erica Dornfeld, thank you so much. Again, the organization is called Faith in Place. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, to find the list of local farmers markets. But you can also go to faithinplace.org to find that list, too. That's where you can also sign up for their newsletter. And, Erica, you'll send out information as you have various farmers markets coming up, won't you?
That's right. We let people know a couple days beforehand, you know, just reminding them where the markets are, which vendors are going to be there, what's available, all that sort of thing.
That's great. All right, Erica, have a great day. Thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mike.
I may see you at one of the markets.
All right, I'll look for you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Pretty perfect weather for planting we've been having, so clean up on end-of-the-season sales at Grand Street Gardens. A garden oasis on Grand Avenue, just east of Western at Levitt. 1 gallon perennials are you ready for this? $2.99. And all fall annuals and deciduous trees are 50% off. And evergreens and containers are 25% off. Now, you should realize the ground's not frozen. This is a really good time to get some perennials in, get some shrubs in. We're kind of getting towards the end of the season, but heck, I told you last week I planted bulbs on January 15th. I don't advise it. At this time of the year, you can usually get away with a lot. The plants are very forgiving except for the ones that want to kill you, and we're going to talk about that in the second hour. At any rate, those prices aren't for the birds, and if you like birds, the migratory species are headed this way, so steer them to your yard with feeders and food from your friends at Grand Street Gardens. The explosion of color at 2200 West Grand Avenue in Chicago.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
I got a tweet from my buddy Tom N. Wants to know, he says Verizon has a free monthly data backup. Which phone did I get? Well, I don't have Verizon. I have Credo. And if you're not why did you snicker?
Because I've never heard of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you about Credo. It's a service of working assets. And what they do is they take a percentage of the money that comes in and they donate it to progressive causes.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And they subcontract with Sprint. So it's basically a Sprint phone. But if you haven't heard of Credo, you should go to Credo, what is it, .org.com? You find out. Because that's why I've been with them. They are the only phone company as far now.
CredoMobile.com.
There we go.
Credo.
Remember when all the phone companies were selling their lists to the government so they could check on you?
Mm-hmm.
Credo did not. It was one of the few phone companies in the country that refused to sell its phone list
and
to the government.
How's the...
Or give it to them. I don't know if they were sold it or gave it to them. Or, what?
Do you get dropped in a tunnel?
No, I do better. All right, this is interesting. In skyscrapers and in downtown, I do better than most other people. You know, the ones with the AT&T and Verizon. In the tunnel, no, not so. Well, I haven't tried it with the new phone, so we'll see. Don't know about the tunnel. But there's got to be some place where you don't get a signal. That's a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
I think so. All right, here's a tip from the care of trees, actually. Oh, we should get Rick on the line, too. It's too early. He's not used to this. Here's a tip from the care of trees. Actually, it's several ways that they give back to the Chicagoland community. They support organizations like the Openlands Tree Keepers. Now, I'm a tree keeper. Tree keeper number 417, reporting for duty. And I know that the care of trees shows up for every course the tree keepers teach, and they show average citizens how to make the urban forest healthier. The Care of Trees also works with the City of Chicago Department of the Environment Green Corps, a job training green industry program which is run out of the Center for Green Technology. And the Care of Trees speaks to garden clubs and teaches their members how to preserve the greatest plants on the planet. These are just three reasons why you should make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Do you want to put that thing we had up there, the song you had ready to go because we were getting it off the internet.
Hold on.
Okay.
I'm sorry because I just had that song loaded into your quick picks.
Oh, wait, you've got it in the quick. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, right, never mind.
That's why I took it off the internet because we got it loaded into this.
All right, hold on.
Because it'll sound a lot better, folks, and then we're not supposed to talk about it and have these beautiful seamless transitions and, you know.
Oh, give up on the seamless transition.
Uh-huh.
But I can't find it here.
It should say time, M-I-K, time.
Okay.
Because the time has changed today, and everybody's going to be bumping into
each other. But it's an M-I-K.
It should be in there. Oh, well, forget about it. I got it right here.
Well, then let's do this song instead.
All right. This is a great song.
Yeah.
You're like Twinkies?
Mike Sanders and I wore almost the same outfit to work today.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Mike, did you hear the call that we
caller was in regards
was listening to your show
was
this morning.
And fired up.
And he got all fired up.
I was doing production for you guys. So.
Now you're going to have to go back and listen to that because it was a great call.
It was awesome.
My wife called and she was like, I thought you were going to blow up, but you never did. So I'm
Mike's a very reasonable guy.
I saw him Wednesday morning. He was not, you were not a happy
man. Hey, none of us were happy Wednesday morning, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
Well,
it's
Sanders here was quite vocal about it.
The price of having conservative friends is that they all pile on you when they win something.
Relatives. I'm the lone wolf, baby.
Well, whoever the caller was, what was the name or do we know?
George.
Thank you, George. I appreciate it.
I hope you're still. And then he asked a question about moles in his lawn, in his garden.
He's going to fight the power and the moles.
And the moles. Mole people. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. It's a Mike Novak show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We lost Rick. All right. While you're finding Rick DeMaio, because we need to do a weather segment here. You know, let me talk about critters you want to get rid of. As we get to winter, your outdoor plants, including evergreens and dormant trees and shrubs, become more vulnerable than ever. Cold weather, blustery winds, and frozen soils reduce a plant's ability to absorb moisture needed to maintain vitality. And then, of course, there's the critters. You know what I need to do is go to Bob-X because they are... I'm going to do that right now, and while I'm doing this, and we're all multitasking here, and I wonder if anybody's called my cell phone yet. Let's see. I haven't seen the get one. I don't know if that's any. We'll see.
Have you figured out how to check your missed calls?
No, not really.
Well, have you had the phone even 24 hours?
Wait, no, that one. Oh. No, I know that. That was...
Here, well, Rick's on line one, and I'll play with
your phone. Oh, no. You don't need to play. No, you're not touching my phone.
play with a phone.
No, I'm putting that away. All right. But anyway, I was talking about Bob-X, and about Bob-X, they help keep critters at bay who are foraging for food, or which are foraging for food, or that are foraging for food. And Bob-X prevents moisture loss while making your plants unpalatable to deer, rabbits, voles, and more. I'm going to look up moles. Now, I don't think so, because moles are trickier.
They might be a little...
And because the weather's cold, you don't have to spray very often. In spring and summer, you might be applying Bob-X every other week. In the fall and winter, you spray every 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the severity of the problem. Now, Bob-X is a family-owned company, and they care about the environment, which is why they use a non-toxic formula that repels critters by both odor and taste, using ingredients like putrescent eggs and garlic, which gives your plants and bulbs a chance to survive the winter. Bob-X is available only at local independent garden centers like Perennial Artistry in Lake Barrington, Illinois, The Branch, Inc. in Highland Park, Illinois, Pasquazi Home and Gardens in Lake Bluff, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. Let's try line one again. Are you there,
I'm here, Mike. How are you?
Are you taking a shower?
Oh, no, I'm just doing some dishes while I talk to you.
You're welcome to, sit in the tub and talk to us on the, that would be...
That would bring a whole new meaning to the show, I think.
Yeah.
Why? I'm just think of it as like, garden work that I'm doing inside, right?
There you go.
Whatever. Hey, listen, it got nippy this week.
Yeah, we got a little, some cold air. We had our first official hard freeze of the season right along the lakefront here in Rogers Park. I finally had to take my plants in. But, the calendar is, November, what is it today, the 7th?
Yes.
Yeah, November 7th. So we're due for for a hard freeze here along the lakefront, but it's going to reverse itself very, very quickly, Mike.
When do you think we're going to get a hard freeze on the lake? Now it's very interesting because those of us who live in the city, of course.
No, we've had the hard freeze.
Oh, we've had it.
Yeah. We had basically temperatures down into the upper 20s to low 30s. Right along the lakefront. So pretty much the growing season is over for our container plots. If you took them inside, you're fine. I'm going to be putting my stuff back on my balcony today, tomorrow, for Tuesday and Wednesday as well, because we're going to be getting into the mid-60s and overnight lows and the lower 40s. So this is all good stuff.
That's amazing. Now, uh-huh. I've started bringing some of my plants up from the basement. I finally got everything indoors, mm-hmm. and but they're still isolated in the basement, and watering them down there, keeping the light on, just mm-hmm. a fluorescent for a few days is not going to kill them.
Right.
But I have so many darn plants. I mean, and some of them are like 50, 60 pounds, these huge pots.
Yeah, you should have your own garden show. That's what you can talk about.
Ba-dum-bum. Thank you.
by the way, Mike and Heather, do you kind of do what I do on the first day of standard time? You try to see how long you can go without changing certain clocks?
No.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Terrified I'm going to miss something, an appointment or my job.
No, I know. I heard you talking about that earlier, but I actually successfully went this entire last stretch of daylight savings time without changing the clock in my kitchen.
You didn't change the clock in your kitchen?
It's a little teeny clock off to the side. I went the entire time, and I'm like, oh, now I don't have to change it.
What's it, like 6 months?
Yeah, about that.
You're a strange dude.
It was what I was like, I'll change it. I'll get around to it.
Well, here's something. I'm glad you brought that up, though, because there's an article that came out of Bloomberg Business Week. Mm-hmm. And is it time, the headline, is it time to ditch the daylight saving time switch? Now, I'm going to read some of this to you.
Why?
And then, let me ask you something. Okay, here's the thing. Heather, do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Go online, ask the question on some search engine, who benefits from daylight saving time? I've seen this before, and one of the things I've heard that one of the major beneficiaries of daylight saving time is golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
It says in this article, not turning the clocks back an hour in the fall would offer a simple way to improve people's health and well-being, according to an English expert. Keeping the time the same would increase the number of accessible daylight hours during the fall and winter and encourage more outdoor physical activity, according to Mayor Hillman, a senior fellow emeritus at the Policy Studies Institute in London. He estimated that eliminating the time change would provide about 300 additional hours of daylight for adults each year and 200 more for children. The proposal, quote, is an effective, practical, and remarkably easily managed way of achieving a better alignment of our waking hours with the available daylight during the year, he pointed out in a news release from the journal's publisher. Another expert, Dr. Robert E. Graham, an internist at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City, said that he totally agrees with Hillman's conclusions. Lessons learned by the explosion of research on the benefits of vitamin D add to the argument for not putting the clocks back. Basic biochemistry has proved to us that sunlight helps your body convert a form of cholesterol that is present in your skin into vitamin D. Additionally, several epidemiological studies have documented the seasonality of depression and mood disorders, Graham said. So it's interesting, though, how they didn't explain why you would get more sun if we didn't change the clocks. And I'm still really not certain about that.
I know for one thing for sure is that this last week, Mike, it has been extremely difficult getting up out of bed at about 6:30, 6:45 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And I teach a couple of 8 o'clock classes, a couple of 7:30 classes, and all the students were saying the same, that I can't get up. But I wonder how that affects then people in the afternoon. All of a sudden you look outside, you go from your office building, and it's dark at 4:30. And usually a lot of people sometimes get the most important things done in that last half hour of the day.
Uh-huh.
And they go, holy smoke, I got to get this done. And they'll go, God, it's 4:30. I don't feel like doing any work right now. I really do wonder how it, how it flips from that standpoint. But I know from a standpoint of having, to be part of the whole trick-or-treating process, Heather, I think you can agree with me, everybody loved the fact that you had an extra hour of sunlight last Sunday when it was a sunny day, and I think that helps out quite a bit as well.
I say we just do it for one day, and that's Halloween, and then we don't need. Well, actually, in the summer it is nice to if we didn't have daylight saving time, I can tell you that when my softball team has a doubleheader, mm-hmm. It would be very hard to get the game in.
Oh yeah,
Because it's because the sun would be setting at 7:30 and not 8:30.
Right, right.
Still, I don't know. It's an interesting question. Speaking of interesting questions, how's the weather? You said it's going to get warm, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I still think part of that deals with the fact that we've had, you know, another hurricane. We had Hurricane Tomas go from a 1 to a 2, back to a depression, and back to a 1 as it moved through, you know, the area just west of Cuba, actually east of Cuba and west of Hispaniola. It looks like there was about 6 to 8 inches of rain that fell in the western areas of that country, with obviously in Haiti, where they had all the problems with the earthquake. Not a lot of mudslide that was feared, which is good news. But still, when you think back to the, back in 2005, we had 28 named storms. This year so far, we're up to 19. And similar to what we had back then, we had a very warm October and a very warm November. And even though we've had a couple of cold snaps, most of those cold snaps are due to these tropical storms kind of pinching off these little pockets of cold air that then slide, you know, further down into the Midwest. And that's exactly what we had this past, you know, week when we had the lake effect rain and sleet showers. Even parts of northwest Indiana had about 2 to 4 inches of snow. So with that said, I'm still thinking, Mike, that, you know, with the warm-up that we've had due to this tropical weather kind of keeping the cold air at bay, eventually, when it does turn, it's going to turn really nasty. I'm still thinking that the last half, or at least the last week of November, and the month of December is going to be very cold and snowy. In fact, a lot of the short-term models out to 10 days are suggesting beginning next week, and we get into a very cold and potentially snowy pattern. We could be talking about snow here in another week and a half. But in the meantime, the weather is great. Sunshine, probably upper 50s, near 60 today. Probably low to mid 60s, if not mid 60s on Monday, and probably mid to upper 60s Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday as well. Readings in parts of Colorado and western Kansas and Nebraska made it into the upper 70s to near 80. Denver missed a record high by 2 degrees, and all that warm air flows in our direction. As long as we keep it somewhat windy during the overnight hours, this is basically September weather. Not September weather, but early October weather in November. So no record highs, but definitely readings averaging nearly 15 degrees above normal over the next 2.5 to 3 days.
Before the other shoe drops.
Yeah, and yeah, but you know what? It's going to be more of a slipper than a shoe. I think the slipper falls probably Thursday and Friday, and maybe the shoe next week, and then after that, maybe a couple of big...
When, and now, I know that Indiana already had measurable snow the other day.
Right, yeah, parts of basically eastern sections of Lake County, western areas of Porter County had about 2.5 to 3 inches of slushy snow. But it was kind of interesting. I was out yesterday morning, and someone had on their car, obviously they were from the Indiana-Michigan area because their license plate said Indiana on it. And I'm like looking, I'm like, oh no, that's crusty snow on the car. And I'm thinking to myself, yuck, I don't want that. As much as I love snow, when you start to see that, you realize that winter isn't too far away. And it was only, what, 40 miles east of us.
Yeah. When you don't see any snow for us in your future?
No. If anything, it's probably a good 10 to 15 days away. But the pattern definitely gets colder and snowier as we head into probably the fourth week of November. I still think the next week and a half looks pretty decent, Mike.
All right. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can find it on my website, MikeNovak.net, on the homepage. Always pleasure to have you here, and enjoy the nice weather. And by the way, when Rick predicts it, it happens. You said earlier in the season it was going to be an active tropical season. Now, we didn't have many slam into the United States.
No, only one, actually. only one tropical storm hit the United States, and actually for Canada, they've had two. They had Hurricane Igor and Tropical Storm Nicole. So this is going to be a very interesting trivia question. Was what year did we have 19 named tropical storms, and Canada actually had more hits than the United States? So that doesn't happen too often.
Actually, it's Igor.
Igor.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. But I was saying that Rick was right. He said we were going to have all those storms. What name are we at right now?
Tomas.
Tomas.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, okay.
We had Cherry and we had Tomas. And,
so when Rick says we're going to get snowy weather and cold weather, well, I mean, it is winter.
Week and a half to 2 weeks, yeah.
Okay, week and a half to 2 weeks. Well, write that down, Heather, because we're going to hold him to this. All right, Rick DeMille weather. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Okay, Mike, take care.
You too. Like it or not, the holiday season is upon us. Don't you love when we just, oh, Heather's already weeping over in the corner. Slide right from Halloween right into to Christmas. We skip Thanksgiving.
And I'm moving in between, so it's just like, why don't I just explode a little more chaos into my life? The idea of Christmas right now, just kind of talk about waking up every 10 minutes a night in cold sweat. Christmas.
Ah, bah humbug. and Sid's Greenhouses invites you to attend their annual Christmas open house starting Saturday, November 13th.
Is beautiful, though, their open house. It is, like, if it's gorgeous.
Through the 20th with a special preview night this Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. at their stores in Palos Hills and Bolingbrook. There's lots planned for this week-long celebration, including tasty holiday refreshments, demonstrations, seminars, door prizes, and perhaps best of all, up to 60% off Christmas decor to help make your holiday celebrations extra special. How cool is that?
That's very cool.
That they take the holiday, 60% off now. Usually it's,
it's
December 26th.
No, or it's, exactly. Or it's Black Friday when you have to fight through there and, like, you know, fear for your life.
Exactly. Sid's has the most extensive selection of Christmas and holiday decor in Chicagoland, like over 100 styles of lifelike artificial trees in sizes up to 12 feet. They have dozens of theme decorated trees loaded with thousands of unique collectible ornaments to choose from. They also have beautiful wreaths, garlands, and Christmas arrangements to decorate your home or office, and it's all up to 60% off during Sid's Holiday Preview Open House starting this Friday at 6 o'clock p.m. Visit sidsonline.com for all the details. Sid's, Chicagoland's premier garden center's nursery and florist, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Great song. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Time has come today.
Time has come today, an hour or later.
Go that way.
So if you didn't set your clock, if you didn't fall back, and most of you fell back into bed, you need to do that now. Well, we've got some great tweets here. Mr. Brownthumb said he'd never heard of Credo. C-R-E-D-O. Yes. You know what? And I could, what I need to do is, they often have these, deals where you...
You refer friends?
Yeah, you refer friends. But see, I'm doing it out of the goodness of my heart. C-R-E-D-O, Credo, is the phone service I use. Mark Lyons, 64, listening to your show while making pumpkin soup. Always enjoy your show. Keep it up. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
There's like homemade pumpkin soup and fresh baked scones out there.
Can we got to get you guys all together.
I want to go eat.
We got to get all together and do this. All right, I got to tell you a real quick story before we go to news. And I got like 2 minutes here. Kathleen and I are on the porch yesterday, and back porch, and I look up and I see this huge bird. It lands on the telephone pole in behind the yard. And it's a raptor. I mean, it's a hawk of some kind. I mean, this is in Logan Square in Chicago. And I go, look at there's, and she goes, what? And I said, there's a hawk up there. Yep. Oh my goodness. Not more than 15 seconds later, the thing flies off, flies into our neighbor's yard, scoops up a rat and flies back. And I'm thinking, this is it. This is rat control in Chicago. We need more hawks.
You do.
I think we just bring them in and let them go.
I read a story that in New York a few years ago, they let loose falcons for the pigeon problem, like some breed of falcon.
Yeah.
And apparently the falcons got tired of pigeon meat because they swooped up someone's pet little chihuahua.
Yeah.
Like some, hoity-toity rich lady with a little, ornamental dog on a leash and the hawk or the falcon came down.
I love the idea of an ornamental dog.
When Paris Hilton had one in her purse, everybody had one in their purse. Not me, but, but I guess the falcon came and I do believe she sued the city for the loss of her dog.
Yeah, it's just a frou-frou dog. Come on.
But I think that's a brilliant idea. I don't blame the falcon for getting
tired of
pigeon
meat. I'm telling you, Richie Daly, before you leave office... Yeah. I want more hawks.
More hawks,
especially.
And falcons.
I want in Logan Square.
Birds of prey.
And there's a few other neighborhoods that could
Birds of prey know they're cool.
I just have never seen anything like it. Which is, it just came down, and you could hear the squeaking, that was the best part. It's like you're done.
I saw a bald eagle catch a fish once. That was wicked
cool. Next hour, Amy Stewart, Wicked Plants That Can Kill You. The plants are out to get us. Never doubt it. We'll be back.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
This is the closest thing I could find to something about wicked plants. Little voodoo action here.
Well, they were written by a woman.
Well, that's true. In fact, the voodoo woman maybe really is Amy Stewart, who's on the line from somewhere on the left coast. How you doing, Amy?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Great. Always glad to, or always nice to have you on the program. Amy's been on the show before. She's one of the Garden Rant women. Before that, I had her on to talk about Flower Confidential. And now she's written this book. See, now I can't get it out
of here. I want it. I might not give it back to you.
I'll give it to you when I'm done with the show. How's that?
Okay. it's you a might cool need, book, Amy.
Thank you.
It is. It's a wonderful book called The Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. Now, what you didn't tell us is which plant killed Lincoln's doctor's dog.
Well, that's in the sequel. You have to wait.
That's in the sequel.
Yeah, that one's going to be in the movie. Wait for it to come out.
I want to see the movie. It's going to be very episodic, though.
It could be. I've actually often thought that a lot of these plants should be in murder mysteries. I'm going to do a workshop with murder mystery writers at a book festival next year, and I'm very excited about it.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, because plants are at the heart of most murder mysteries.
Sure.
The good ones.
The good ones. The gardener is always a suspect.
Right, exactly, yes.
The gardener is always...
that weird person puttering around in the greenhouse muttering to themselves.
Right, who knows more than anybody else about what's going on.
Yeah.
It would make it terrific. Meeting up with the garden, mystery writers will be fabulous. And they're going to want to learn from you, because here you have this book, and you talk about all the different plants that can kill us.
Yes.
And there are many. In fact, as I said earlier, and I've said on the website, plants are out to get us.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is that if you're a plant, it's pretty important to you not to get eaten, right? Like, your list of priorities for the day, don't get eaten.
You can't run.
You can't run. You're rooted in the ground. You have no opposable thumbs. You can't fight back. There's a limit to really what you can do to keep from getting eaten.
You can't tweet for help or anything,
So it's okay, but weirdly some plants do that. There are plants that will send out pheromones saying, "I'm being eaten by some bugs," and they're sending out the pheromones to bugs that eat the bugs that are currently devouring the plant. Like, they send out a notice to parasitic wasps to come get these things off me.
Yeah, but, you know, and by the same token, that can work against, well, insects can work against the plant. Like in the case of Japanese beetle, when they send out a pheromone that says, hey, I'm chowing down on this plant. Come on, come on over. There's lunch here. You know, so it can work both ways.
It can. It can. It's a complicated world out there.
It is. Now, what in the world, and I know you've been asked this a gazillion times, and by the way, when did the book come out?
The book has been out for a year and a half. It came out.
No, has it really been out that long?
Yeah, time flies.
And I'm the last person to interview you about the book in the whole...
Well, you're the last person, like, today.
Oh, so you got some more lined up?
There could be more.
Oh, she's being nice. She's like, Mike, you're so far behind the curve. But see,
But as for your question about what made me decide to write it, I've decided to start coming up with new and inventive answers to that question. And I'm going to have like a different answer every day. To that
All right,
question.
What's your one for today?
Well, there is this troll that lives under my deck. And if I feed him rotten turnips every day for a month, he will come out and give me an idea for a book.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
I get them all from him.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
I get them from the dust balls under my bed.
I was going to say, but there's no billy goat problem in your backyard.
But this is a lovely book because it's even though it's been out for a year and a half, this is a book that you want to get for your gardening friends. And we're coming up on the holidays.
It's a good Christmas present. You can be pretty sure people, you know, like, what do I get for the gardener who has everything? They probably don't have this.
That's
so, you know.
Very true.
Right.
That's
and
cool.
And it's, and I'm sorry to say, but happy to say, it's a bathroom book. It's one of those things. It is because it's episodic and you can read one chapter and put it down. You can read, you know, one paragraph and put it down. And you even, I love this. You have a bookmark.
Yeah, there's a built-in bookmark, and it's so pretty, the cover.
Well,
it's this awesome green color.
Yes, well, I should warn our listeners, they don't all have bookmarks in them. They did that with the first two printings, and then they stopped doing it. So I cannot guarantee you that you will get one with a bookmark.
And that's another thing. You said the first two printings. This is a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah. Eight printings. We're up to eight.
Oh, my goodness. Did you see that coming?
No, not really. I think the thing about this book is, first of all, it is small and it is kind of cool looking. You know, it's like this groovy little cool looking book, and it's under $20. And to tell you the truth, I think that's what seals the deal for people, is they're like, wow, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother, what is that? And they sort of pick it up and they're like, oh, honey, we should get one of these for Bill for his birthday. And, you know, there you go.
And if you have enemies, it's a great book. Because you can figure out, you know, I've decided that I'm jealous of you for being a New York Times bestseller. I'm going to send you a nice azalea plant and encourage you to eat it.
Well, thank you for that. You could bake them into cookies. You know, I actually did a little piece one time for Time Out New York about how to murder your dinner guest using a wicked plant. And I really had to think it through. Like, what plant would I use? How would I do it? How would I get away with it? I really kind of had to think like a murderer in order to
this well, just screams live theater bash to me. Yeah. Like, you get a room full of writers, actors, and the author of Wicked Plants in a room.
Yeah, you just shout out a plant. You
right.
You just shout out, like,
like, all you need is an audience and your dinner theater.
Here's the problem. You shout out the name of a plant, and it's going to be able to do some harm to somebody. You do a list of various things here. You break it down into categories. And a recurring theme, by the way, in the book... are the attempts to kill other people, sometimes successful, sometimes not.
And it's mostly wives poisoning their husbands. Did
yes.
you notice that?
Yes, women, I did notice that.
Women are sneaky and smart, and they want to get the job done. They don't want to mess around with a gun or a knife. No, you put it in their dinner and set them down and say, here, honey, I made you this nice, you know, stew. And then you get in a cab and go to the airport.
Problem is, some of it, you know, as you mentioned in the book, it can be traced often because of the peculiar effects that plants have. It's hard to not notice that they just ate a meal and then got very sick.
Right, sure. Yeah, and especially if you know what you're looking for. I mean, there was a woman in the Seattle area who died earlier in the spring, and she had pulled something out of her garden that she thought was maybe a carrot, and it turned out to be hemlock. And they knew what to look for, so they were able to get the right toxicology test to figure out what had happened. So,
well, by the way, that's Amy Stewart. She's the author of Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. It's a year and a half out, so I'm going to give it away, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother.
Sure.
I mean, you write about it in there anyway. It's basically white snake root, Eupatorium rugosum, and if you grow Joe Pye weed in your backyard, and many of us do, I do. That's the other thing that scared the heck out of me. At least a couple of dozen plants that are in the book are in my yard or in my house.
Well, many of them are. And here's the thing, though, is that just because a plant is growing in your house or in your yard doesn't mean you eat it for breakfast.
And, well, that's true.
And I think I really would encourage people, you know, look up people who tell me, oh, now I'm terrified to go outside. It's like, walk into, like, your bathroom and look around at what's in there. The shaving cream, the shampoo, the razor blades, the Band-Aids. These are not food items for you to eat, right? Like, we don't eat our shaving cream. We're not terrified of it. We just know that it's not for breakfast.
Well, maybe you don't.
Well, all right. But you know, so the thing with Lincoln's mother is not that she ate the plant, but that a cow ate the plant, and the cow got real sick. The poison ends up in the milk. She drinks the milk and gets sick and dies, which was called milk sickness. Mm-hmm. So that was an accidental ingestion. She didn't mean to eat it. The cow didn't even mean to eat it. But nobody knew at the time that there were poisons that could end up in cow's milk. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you point out, you know, it's interesting because as we evolve, science discovers what plants are poisonous, and through the millennia, a lot of people knew that already, although they didn't know the exact ingredients.
Right.
And stews and potions have been made up in various cultures, some hallucinogenic, other poisonous, and so forth. But what's interesting is we get into the 20th century, we're using fewer and fewer of the toxic elements in these plants. In the case of the United States, as you point out in the book, often they're banned, or they're controlled substances. And in other cultures, they might still be used, but often what we do is we distill it so we can get the essence of it, but not the toxic nature.
Yeah, absolutely. There are all kinds of examples of that. Think about castor beans, which, you know, you guys in Chicago, I mean, that plant is such a spectacular summer plant for you all.
Why? Is it not in California?
Well, people are weirdly not as into it. I don't know why that is. I think there's something about Chicago, maybe it's the winters, that you really go nuts with kind of these tropical, lush plants in the summer. And I think because we're year-round gardeners in California, so we just don't change it up that much for the warm weather.
Mm-hmm.
But my point with castor bean is, very poisonous plant. The seeds contain ricin. It would only take a few of those seeds, chewed well, to kill a person. But we live with the plant. You know, you can obviously pinch the little seed pods off so they don't grow into full-blown seeds. But castor oil, people ask me this all the time. Well, my mother used to feed me castor oil. Was she trying to kill me? And it's like, well, no. She wasn't trying to kill you. They extract the ricin from that before they make it into, you know, castor oil. So there are all kinds of examples of how we pull the poisons out and then use the rest of the plant for something else.
We've got a question that just came in, Heather.
Well, they want to know, what are some known plants that have dangerous facts to them? Like, you know, a normal everyday plant that everyone's aware of that might have like a sinister...
Oh, you read the book and you can find dozens and dozens of them. One of the things, as I mentioned, I grow them. I was surprised to hear that a peace lily is a poisonous plant, but as Amy says, don't eat it. And that solves your problem.
Yeah, a lot of house plants are actually tropical plants. They're jungle plants, and that's why they do so well in our homes, is they like the kind of low light and the year-round temperature about the same and all that. And a lot of them contain oxalic acid, which will definitely burn your mouth, could potentially close your throat up. But, you know, you're not likely to eat a lot of it. I think where it's more of a concern is for pets. For instance, the sago palm, which is a house plant for you guys and a conservatory plant, beautiful plant, but it's very, very toxic to dogs. And I know I regularly hear from people whose dogs died after nibbling on sago palm.
Including Lincoln's doctor's dog?
I don't don't know about that.
Just wondering.
But you know, pets and little tiny children who just put everything in their mouths who are too young to know otherwise. That's I think.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I had a friend a number of years ago ask me what's the Tartarian bush with the red berries?
Tartarian bush.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Tartarian something, but you know, I looked it up and said, yeah, the red berries are kind of they won't kill a kid, but they're going to make them sick.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be careful because. And you're right. I think you wrote in here that people who go hiking in the woods feel they can eat anything.
Oh yeah, here is my message to people out on a hike. Take a sandwich. Seriously, I regularly get because I get all these news alerts about plant poisonings that I subscribe to, and I am amazed at the people who it's not like they've been wandering lost in the woods for 3 days and they have to eat something before they die. These are people who are just out for an afternoon stroll in the woods, and they're putting berries and leaves and roots and just whatever they can find in their mouth. It's like make a sandwich, take a power bar. You know, they fit in your pocket. How can you possibly be that hungry? I just think, you know, if you don't know what it is, you're not sure what it is, don't put it in your mouth. I people love to show me around their gardens. I go around someone's garden, they'll pull a leaf off a shrub and go, here, taste this. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. No, thanks. I'm fine. I just ate. I don't need to eat that. it's silly to think that because something grows out of the ground, it's good for us. It's not. Plants are not thinking about us. They're looking out for themselves.
I think it's a really good point, though, yeah, that plants are just trying to survive. And one of the ways they do, like butterflies that have bright colors, is they have poisonous substances. And but the other thing they have, and by the way, feel free to call me if you got a question about a plant in your house and you want to know if it's going to kill your dog. 773-838-9278. 773-838-WCPT. I want to go back to the question that the woman, was it a woman or a man?
Yeah, it was a woman.
Who
she was in her car.
She's in her car.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't she want to be on the...
She was in her car. She was driving.
Oh, that's right.
She was in her car.
Oh, good for you.
Safe motor.
Hands-free, safe commuter,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
But she was asking about plants, and let's start with the indoor, because the brief list you have here of indoor plants that are poisonous are, as I said, peace lily, mm-hmm. English ivy, philodendron, Diffenbachia, ficus tree and rubber tree, pencil cactus, or milk bush, sometimes it's called,
mm-hmm.
Jerusalem cherry, or Christmas cherry. I've grown all of them.
Yeah,
I have all of them except the Jerusalem cherry in my home right now.
Okay. You're ready.
And then you go to plants that are pretty. And I didn't know some of these, like azalea and rhododendron, daphne, colchicum. I grow colchicum in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a black locust, but, you know, foxglove. I have foxglove. Hellebore, which is Lenten rose or Christmas rose. Hydrangea.
Right.
Oh, come on. Hydrangea?
Well, okay, so hydrangeas have a little bit of cyanide in them. It's not a lot of cyanide. But, you know, I go to weddings and people will use hydrangea flowers as cake toppers, and I'm like, you know, I don't think I want to start my marriage off with even a little bit of cyanide on top of the wedding cake.
Yeah, you never know.
Well, you know, sometimes the newlywed wives are already trying to do in the husbands, so maybe that's...
Now I really want that book.
Lantana, lobelia,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's just the list goes on and on and on. So basically, in answer to the woman's question, who's driving, please don't drive off the road when I say this. Everything's poisonous and you're going to die. All right?
Well, just like certain plants that aren't poisonous that you can't eat, like lettuce, does lettuce have like an evil twin?
Well, you know, lettuce does not necessarily have an evil twin, but I did include, there's a section called Deadly Dinners, where
yes.
I did include ordinary foods that we eat that have some toxic quality.
Like corn.
Corn.
Corn!
The thing with corn is you would have to eat nothing but corn morning, noon, and night, you know, for quite a while to develop this vitamin deficiency.
But you know what? I would. I love sweet corn so much that I'm one of those guys. I would do it morning, noon, and night, but it's a good thing that... there are other people that keep me away from that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is you develop this niacin deficiency, and it was called pellagra, and it was a very severe nutritional disorder. But these were people who seriously were hard up all winter long and had nothing but the corn that they had stored
and
up to eat.
And rhubarb, of course. Now, one thing that I was kind of maybe it's later in the book and I missed it, but I was reading the rhubarb and the leaves are poisonous, but you didn't mention anything about the stalks because that's what we use to
cook. The stalks are fine. It's the leaves that contain high levels of oxalic acid and can be pretty dangerous. And this is another point, is that some plants have a part of the plant that's poisonous, but the whole thing is not. And plants move poisons around as they grow. Hemlock starts out very toxic when the little leaves first come out of the ground, but as it ages, it's moving the poison up into the seeds. So sometimes people will tell me, well, I once ate a hemlock leaf, and I'm fine. And I'm like, I'm so glad to hear that. Please don't ever do that again. Just because it worked out for you once. Even things like the time of day, whether it's a hot day or not, how much water's in the soil, a lot can affect the degree of toxicity of a plant.
Let me read something that, and while we're on the foods here, there's more. Elderberry, as Amy writes, this fruit, popular in jams, cakes, and pies, is much more dangerous when consumed raw. In 1983, a group of people attending a retreat in Central California had to be flown by helicopter to a hospital after drinking fresh elderberry juice. Most parts of the plant, including the uncooked fruit, may contain varying levels of cyanide.
Yes,
generally people experience severe nausea and recover.
Right. And so the thing with elderberry is there's many different species, and it can depend on how ripe the berry is. You know, I mean, the English make all kinds of elderberry jams and elderberry wines and things like that. With a species of elderberry that's safe when the berries are completely, completely ripe. And here in the United States, we've actually got a number of different species of elderberries, and the cyanide levels do vary from plant to plant. But again, you know, a lot of this stuff can be processed out. There's all kinds of foods we eat. Kidney beans, for instance, have to be cooked very, very thoroughly, or soaked very, very thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
So there are the notion that processed foods are somehow bad. We've been processing foods for 10,000 years. That's how we make food safe to eat.
Yeah, but you can always make a mistake.
You can always make a mistake, and with tragic consequences. And there are plants like cassava root that are eaten around the world that have to be processed very carefully, or people get very sick.
And I have to throw this in, because if you make a serious mistake, you know what's going to happen? You're going to shock the monkey, and you don't want to shock the monkey, all right?
No one likes a shock monkey.
I'm sorry. Here's another one. Cashews, which are related to poison ivy, poison oak, and poison sumac.
That's right.
Cashews, the
only part of the cashew tree that does not cause a rash to people who are sensitive to things like poison ivy and poison oak is that little nut itself. The outer shell, have you ever shelled a cashew nut in your life?
No,
you have not. And the reason is they have to steam that off. It can't be touched. It has to be steamed off, and every other part of the plant can't be handled, or you'll get a rash.
That explains the price of a can of cashews now, doesn't it?
It actually does.
It does. If you have to go through safety precautions to get to the actual part you can enjoy.
One of the things that Amy points out in the book, tell the story of the Little League team in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah. So there was this team that was selling you know how they go around and they do these little fundraisers, right?
Yeah.
So they were selling these bags of nuts, and it turned out to have been some nuts that had been processed very, very badly and still had little bits and pieces of the cashew plant, little, you know, leaves or twigs or little parts of it. And so what that meant is that urushiol that's in these poison ivy and poison oak were all over the nuts, and so people got real sick. Surprise, surprise.
And urushiol is just nasty stuff. Have you ever had poison ivy, Amy?
No. I may be one of, you know, about 25% of the population is not allergic at all. And another 25, or, you know, another big, big chunk is horribly, horribly allergic, and everybody else is somewhere in between. Where do you fall in that?
Well, it's another reason for me not to like you. First is a New York Times bestseller author, okay? And the other is that you're not allergic to poison ivy. Here's my deal. I was just out of Master Gardener training and looking for some work. Mm-hmm. So I could learn something, you know, get on site and do something. And there was this posting up at the Chicago Botanic Garden on the bulletin board and said they were looking for somebody to come in and do some work in their yard. And so I applied, and they hired me to do it. And they wanted to renovate this big swath, and it was out in the burbs, this big swath of area. And I just went in and started hacking, okay, just ripping stuff out, and found out there was poison ivy in there.
Oh, man.
Too late. Yeah. And I had it on my arms and around the waist, you know, where you have any area where if there's the clothes are tight,
yeah,
that's where you'll get a ring of it. And, of course, the guy I was working for was a dermatologist.
Oh.
And he never told me that there was poison ivy on site.
That's terrible.
Because he wanted you as a client. Duh.
Well, I don't know. It was before I did the radio thing. So
no, he didn't care. He just, that's another skin cream prescription.
Zamboni writes or tweets to us that this sounds like a terrific episode for Nova. Have you talked to those people, Amy?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get it on there.
Why not? Now, the other thing that plants do, and it's not just kill people, it's make them feel good. And you talk about that a lot. I mean, there's a lot of hallucinogenics and other kinds of what would be the thing that alcohol does.
Mind-altering.
Mind-altering.
Yeah, I mean, anything, you know, I defined as wicked. I think if a plant is illegal, it qualifies as a wicked plant. So I put it in there. And, you know, there's really only about a dozen or so plants that are actually, the plant itself is illegal in the United States, meaning, you know, the feds are going to come knock on your door if you're growing any in the basement. So
that's not very many.
What's the list? Now I'm curious.
Oh, what's the list? What's the list of illegal plants? Well, you know a few of them, right?
Right.
Like cannabis.
Right.
Opium poppies.
But okay, but let's stop right there. With cannabis, you know, we got cannabis, but there's just different kinds of cannabis. For one thing, if we were growing hemp, that would be a wonderful resource. And yet we're so nutty about cannabis that it's like you'd think there are no scientists at all in the country.
You want to open up the Prop 19 debate already?
You know, I'm telling you, it's we should be growing that, but it's like we can't tell the difference between two different species.
Well, they're not different species is the problem. Hemp is the same species. It just is a different variety or a different cultivar that has lower THC. So,
from what I understand, virtually non-existent THC.
Right, right. Yeah.
All right. But okay, so I learned something there. It's the same species, just different cultivar. Or variety, whatever. It's not a cultivar, it's a variety.
You can't really tell by looking. So, you know, that's the argument, I think.
But as you point out in the book, weed control in the country is tearing down hemp plants all the time.
This was astonishing to me. I had no idea. It's something like 98% of our of the marijuana plants that we eradicate in this country are hemp. They're ditchweed plants. And it works out to, you know, it works out to billions and billions of dollars that we spend basically just pulling out a weed that can't do anybody any harm. It's astonishing that we go to all that effort.
Yeah. It is, but we're terrified of Marahuchi, and we're going to continue to do that. You said opium. Obviously, is another one, opium poppy.
Now that's a very interesting one because the seeds are legal. And the reason the seeds are legal is that we use them in poppy seed muffins and so forth. And, you know, we've all heard about, oh, you eat a poppy seed muffin and you fail a drug test.
Right.
The reason is those are, in fact, the seeds of the opium poppy. And so as long as you possess the seeds, you're safe. But the minute you go out in the garden and you germinate one of those seeds, you're an outlaw. Because all other parts of the plant are illegal to possess. So the funny thing is that seed catalogs sell opium poppy seeds as a flower, you know, as a flower seed.
Uh-huh.
And garden centers even sell the plant, although it's illegal. Usually what they do is they don't put the technical name, Papaver somniferum, on it. They call it, you know, they come up with some pretty name for it. But the DEA actually once sent letters out to all the garden seed companies saying, we know that technically you're allowed to sell the seeds, but you're obviously selling them so people will plant them in their garden and grow them. So would you be willing to just voluntarily stop doing that? And the seed companies all went, no. So unlike cannabis, which I don't think anyone would dare grow in their flower bed out front, you know, lots of people plant opium poppies and grow them out in the open. And we routinely look the other way. It's funny the difference between those two plants.
It really is.
In that way.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Then there's peyote.
There is peyote. That's an interesting one in that there are all kinds of hallucinogenic mushrooms out there that are not on the DEA's list. But peyote being sort of the one that's best known and the one that needed a exemption so that Native Americans could use it in their religious practices, that's the one that everybody knows about. And of course, there's very little wild peyote left because it gets over-harvested. People go out looking for it. But it can't be protected because it's technically illegal. So, you know, you're not going to see anybody stepping in, any government agency stepping in wanting to protect wild populations of it because it is, after all, against the law. So that's one that has a weird status as a mushroom.
And by the way, it's like the hikers eating berries. Mm-hmm. If you're the kind of, excuse me, if you don't know your mushrooms and you're out there trying to find a what's the word they use? A hallucinogenic mushroom, but I'm thinking of the,
shroom?
There was another phrase. I can't remember. But anyway, you pretty much deserve what's coming to you when you end up in the hospital. You know, it's just, don't be crazy about that.
Oh, you do not want to mess with mushrooms. No.
They're among the most toxic, aren't they?
That's a quick way to lose your liver, and you will not be far behind. Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, before I let you go, one other way that plants are wicked is when they take over things.
Yes. Invasive plants.
Invasive plants. And, you know, you talk about a few things like purple loosestrife is
mm-hmm.
one of them,
mm-hmm.
which is the scourge of pretty much every, you know, a lot of, I don't know how many different states it's in now.
It has really moved. It's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the ones that I think people are not aware of, and I am aware of this because I read this book a few years ago, I want to say 8 to 10 years ago, and interviewed the author about Caulerpa taxifolia,
yes.
which is a seaweed.
Yes.
And what it's an amazing story. Why don't you briefly tell us that story?
Yes. And I'm glad you had the author on because it's a really fabulous book. The book is called Killer Algae, I believe. And
yes.
Killer Algae is sort of how we refer to this plant. It really is a seaweed. But basically, this is a seaweed that used to only grow in warm water oceans. It weirdly mutated, one individual plant weirdly mutated and was able to grow in cold water aquariums in Europe. Pretty soon, it's all over Europe in aquariums. Then it goes overboard. It escapes.
Wait! Not so fast. I mean, one of the things it mutated probably in an aquarium in Stuttgart, Germany.
Yep, Germany.
And then got sent, as you said, to aquariums all over Europe, including the Jacques Cousteau Oceanographic Museum in Monaco.
In Monaco, right? Yeah.
And apparently, somebody dumped one of the containers out into the Mediterranean. And it got free.
Yes.
And, you know, and then it just started growing and growing and growing and growing. And it has taken over. What's the numbers you have right now?
Well, it's taken over. It's in 12,000 acres of the ocean floor was the latest number I had.
Well, I'm looking at your book here. I just found it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you say the Caulerpa taxifolia spans over 32,000.
Oh, right. 32,000. Yeah, you're
almost
right.
50 square miles. And part of the problem is it is a plant that no fish wants to eat.
It's poisonous.
So it takes over, and then it crowds out everything else, and it's showing up all over the Mediterranean, and someday we won't have any native plants in the Mediterranean. We're going to have Caulerpa taxifolia.
Right, and the other thing is that you run a boat engine through it, or you drag an anchor through it, you chop off a little bit of the plant, it's freakishly able to propagate so that every little tiny bit that gets chopped up grows into a new plant wherever it gets spit back out again.
Yeah, and it's a single-celled plant, which is really weird.
That is weird, one giant cell. So that's freaky. The other freaky thing is they've done DNA testing of all the places it's broken out around the world, and it's all the same plant.
So there's one.
The one plant.
Now, see, this is like the giant mushroom in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan that's,
right.
you know, thousands of square miles large. It's a fungus. that you know may take over the world. But the Caulerpa, I think we, for some reason, Caulerpa taxifolia scares me more than just about any other plant on Earth. I'm not sure why.
It's because our oceans are, we just can't live without them. I mean, they're so vitally important, and to have a plant that can basically create dead zones in the ocean is bad, bad news.
And we create our own dead zones by putting, you know, fertilizers into the ocean. There are more than 400 dead zones all over the planet at the mouths of rivers, not just the United States, but all over the world. And then we throw oil into the mix, and then we have Caulerpa taxifolia. We're doomed.
Well, I think the message is that we think of plants as being so benign and good, and I think we overlook the fact that they have power. Like everything else in nature, plants have a lot of power, and we got to respect that.
That's a really good way to wrap this up. Wicked Plants is the name of the book, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. It is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. The link is on my website, MikeNovak.net. There's also a link to Amy Stewart's website, and she's got it plastered all over that. And there's also a link to Garden Rant. What's the latest hot topic on Garden Rant?
The latest hot topic on Garden Rant is that there was an argument about people saying that local food is actually too difficult and time-consuming, and that large industrial agriculture is really a better use of our resources. And that got Michelle Owens very worked up. So she sort of went off on that.
Good. I'm going to go back and take a look. You know what? I think I'm going to get Michelle on the program to talk about that, because it just seems counterproductive, if you ask me. But
absolutely.
You can go. You can find the link to Garden Rant too. Amy, always a pleasure having you on board. And what's the next book?
Wicked Bugs comes out in May.
Okay, I want to be one of the first. Okay, can we book you now for Wicked Bugs?
I'm coming back.
All right. So when you go to your PR people, say, Mike gets first dibs.
Okay, I'll tell him.
All right. Thanks, Amy. We will talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.
Just because we're nearing the end of the spring blooming bulb planting season doesn't mean that you can't do it right. Now, what do I mean? I mean disguising your bulbs the way I put on a suit and tie and walk into a fancy restaurant like I actually have the money to pay for a meal. I'm talking about dunking them bulbs. And it's the language that usually gives me away. And Bob XR, the Bob XR formula creates an aromatic barrier around the bulb and prevents critters like voles and squirrels from discovering them. Now, here's what I'm going to do. We had, what was it, George, earlier? Yeah, I'm going to find out about moles. I'm not sure that Bob X works on moles, but I was looking on the, searching the website and didn't see anything about moles. But I'm going to get some mole. In fact, George, if you want to write to me, And send me the information. I will get back to you. But back to Bob X. Here's how you do it. You immerse spring blooming bulbs in concentrated Bob X R. That's right out of the bottle. You allow the bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes. Remove the bulbs from the concentrate, allow them to air dry, and then you pop those babies in the ground. Bob X is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals, and it's made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bob X is available only at your local independent garden center, and you can always order it online. And if you call Bob X, you're going to talk to a real-life human being. Unbulb-leavable. It's one of my favorite phrases now. You can find Bob X products at Geimer Greenhouse in Long Grove, Illinois, Hager's Country Market in Barrington, Effinger Garden Center in Belleville, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob X. Now, Halloween is gone. It's gone, folks. Let's move along. Nothing to see here. It's time to look ahead to the end of November when Cantini Gardens in Wheaton presents its Shades of Crimson poinsettia display at the Cantini Greenhouse. Now, I know that some of you say poinsettia. You're wrong, because I've decided that it's poinsettia. At any rate, but that's coming up on the 30th of November from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And admission is free. You're going to see 4,000, count them, 4,000 poinsettias all in one place at this annual open house. Cantini Horticulture staff members will be on hand there to discuss the plants and answer questions. You might remember, I think it was 2 years ago on this very program, we had the Brackdorf. You weren't here at that time, Heather, but the first year I was here, I had the Mike Novak Brackdorf, and I wanted my listeners to get Brackdorf, and that's because the thing on a poinsettia that turns red is not a leaf. It's a bract.
Okay. What's the difference between a leaf and
a bract? It is a leaf. The bract is not a bloom is what I meant to say.
Oh.
The bract is a leaf. It's not a bloom.
Oh, okay.
The bloom's a really tiny little thing.
The little things inside, the little yellow thingies.
But the red thing is actually a bract.
So technical. Look how much I've learned from you. The thingy and the little plant there.
I know.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
And you don't eat those either.
And what we did is I tried to get people to get their poinsettias to turn red. And we had a couple of people who were nutty enough to do it because it's like you got to lock it in a closet every night. It can only get a certain amount of sunlight. You can't expose it to any light during the day, and it has to have perfect darkness.
Is that how it has red lights per white or red leaves per white leaves?
No, it's just different cultivars. But it's tough to do. People can do it, and sometimes it happens naturally if you leave it in the garage and you know the natural light does it. But if you add any extra light at all, it ruins the whole deal. Anyway, at Cantini Gardens, November 30th, 10 to 3 p.m., 4,000 poinsettias. Admission is free. You can't beat the price. For more information, go to Cantini. It's Cantigny.org.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Are you still paying attention to rainfall? I hope so. Even as the weather has gotten colder, the rainfall in certain areas here in the Midwest has remained modest, which means that you shouldn't give up on watering yet, especially if you planted trees in the past 3 years. The ground is still warmer than the air above it, which means that the root systems are still active. And trees, especially evergreens, need to store water before we get to the bone-chilling days of winter. So even if it seems weird, and I know I tell you a lot of weird stuff, get out the drip hose, lay it at the base of your trees, and, you know, just a trickle. You just want to trickle it out there, and you let it trickle for as long as a couple of hours, and do it until the ground is frozen, especially if we're not getting rain. And believe me, we have not been getting very much rain. And make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. And we have that girl online right now. It's Tracy Hall from Angelic Organics Learning Center. How are you, Tracy?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
Oh, just fine. And this is our good growing segment on the Mike Novak Show. Every week we catch up with what's going on in the world of urban agriculture and gardening in Chicago and events that are happening. And one of the events that's coming up is something that you're going to be, a class you're going to be teaching called Farm Beginnings. Tell us a little bit about that, Tracy.
The class that's coming up is Farm Dreams.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at your other class, Farm Beginnings. It's Farm Dreams. Sorry.
That's all right. That class is coming up on the 20th of November. And it's a class that's designed for people who have, you know, you'd often hear them say, I've really always wanted to farm, but I've never taken a step toward it, or as a small farmer, I'll hear people say, you know, you're really living my dream life. And so the class is a chance for them to explore a little more pointedly that dream, you know, to look at not only the passion, but also the risks involved in stepping a little closer to what they've always wanted.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't say offhand. I mean, I'm sure that there are people who have thought about farming, but over the years, and maybe it's because I'm closer to the business, it seems like a really, really hard job, and that it's the problem is one of the problems. It's a 364 or 65 day a year job. And you're getting up before the crack of dawn and you're going to bed after the sun has set. And, if you got animals, they need attention every day and plants need attention. It sounds like just a really, really hard job. Well, how would you respond to that?
I do think it is, a job that requires you to work hard. And so it is something to be aware of in yourself. Like, I know that I love to work hard and I feel more alive when I'm working hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I that's a really good point. But some people just like a little time off.
And I think it is one of the things that's challenging, particularly when you're starting farming.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we aim to do for the sustainable farmers in our network is to help create community for them. You know, so many people come into farming without a farming background, and so they don't have those aunts and uncles that are farming next door.
Yeah.
That could come take care of, you know, the animals overnight or something.
Well, you know, it's like having a kid, I guess, and that's something that Heather can relate to. It really helps to have the support system. So if you have people in your family who have done this before or something like it, it probably really helps, doesn't it?
It does. And so through our craft network, we aim to connect, you know, beginning farmers with one another and also with mentors, you know, who already have the experiences and the wisdom to say things like, you know, when you're starting your farm, as soon as you can, hire additional labor. You know, so if I had known what I know now, I would have done that much sooner, for example.
Well, we've got a question for you, Tracy, that came over Twitter. What's the smallest acreage you can farm and make a meager living? I guess so. So yeah. You know, no, come on, let's have bigger dreams. Let's the smallest acreage you can farm and take over the city.
You would be surprised at what people can do on very limited acreage. There's a farmer who's very well known for his raspberries, who farms on 2.5 acres up near Madison.
Uh-huh.
And there are certainly people...
2.5 acres, you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not very big. Now, and is that all he does?
He also he sells at the you know, Madison on the Square. He also does vegetables there. So
uh-huh.
Has a very densely farmed piece of land, but he's doing it organically and I think very well.
So that's a really good point, actually, which is people think of farmers and they think industrial farming now, which has, you know, been the trend for the last 40 years is basically get bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we've put the brakes on and we're trying to turn the ship around and go into smaller farming so that people can survive on their own land and do, you know, raise a small amount of crops or
yeah,
a number of crops.
And so in some ways it makes the job more complex because in order for these smaller farmers to be successful, we're really encouraging them to do more direct sales rather than participating in that big commodity market. So then they do need to learn skills like, you know, how to market their product. And a lot of that is about how to tell their story, you know, because people are really drawn to the stories of who these farmers are and what they do.
Well, I assume that a small farm like that is not going to get a subsidy the way large farms do.
Right. That's most of those systems are existing for a whole different group of farmers. In fact, it's also much more difficult to borrow money because the banks expect you to grow a certain way.
Uh-huh. But that's a very interesting point because small farmers, in a sense, are in the real free market, whereas the big farmers, it's something else altogether.
Yes, I think that's right.
Because there's the subsidies, and you're doing that, and you can only plant certain crops, and you can't plant others, and the market's manipulated. With a small farmer, is the market truly free? I mean, is it supply and demand at work?
Yes. I mean, certainly it is supply and demand at work. I can't just set my price based on how much it costs me. I certainly need to sell, you know, a farmer needs to sell their product for more than the cost of growing it, but they also really need to pay attention to the market forces. You know, what is organic broccoli selling for at the farmer's market, and what's it selling for at Whole Foods?
And I imagine a lot of people rush into this, and they think they're going to be a farmer, and they don't give a thought to any of these things about what the prices are out there. And I mean, it's one thing to teach somebody how to grow a plant, and it's quite another to teach them how to market it.
Yes, and we find that people really need very good planning skills. They need those production skills about how to grow it. And they need all of the business skills that anyone, you know, any entrepreneur would need to get a business off the ground. I think you really have to be smart and well-educated to get a farm going and well-supported.
Now, before I let you go, a question I would have is, are you looking at people who want to farm in the country or the suburbs or the city or all of the above?
We get people that are interested in all those different varieties. We, in the Farm Beginnings class we did last year, we had some farmers who were growing in Barrington, and then one who's developing her skills because she wants to grow on urban lots, and then several that have started in more rural areas.
Well, that's Tracy Hall. She's teaching Farm Dreams, Assessing Risks and Resources to Start a Small Farm or Market Garden, and that is on November 20th, and it's going to be in Caledonia, right?
That's right. At the Angelic Organics Farm is where the Learning Center is planted.
Yeah. Right, and you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show, and I've got the information on it, but you can also go to www.learngrowconnect.org, and you can track it down at that site. I won't give the full URL because it's always longer than you want. thank you for being part of the Good Growing segment this week, Tracy, and I hope we talk again real soon.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much for having me.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Now, do you know what a Zone 5 garden is? Well, if you live around Chicago, there's a pretty good chance you have one. And the November-December edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, your resource for Zone 5 gardening, has hit the newsstands. In this issue, you'll read about the Birdman in suburban Aurora, who has created a garden sanctuary for wildlife of all kinds by planting hundreds of plants, many of them natives, and just because the weather's getting colder doesn't mean that you can't create breathtaking containers. You'll learn how. Speaking of containers, can you apply organic techniques to your favorite house plants, the ones that might kill you? The answer is in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's also my annual group of holiday carols set to gardening lyrics. It must seem like I have a lot of free time. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but you can subscribe and have it delivered to your door. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Hold on. I need a little drink of water.
Wet that whistle there, mister.
Wet the whistle,
read.
Baby.
Keep reading.
No, I'm going to make you read one.
Okay.
All right. I'll let you do it. Here you go.
Miss Smarty Pants.
That's right. I'm going to take 60 seconds off. Go.
Okay. Like it or not, the holiday season is upon us, and Sid's Greenhouses invites you to attend their annual Christmas open house starting Saturday, November 13th through the 20th, with a special preview night this Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. at their stores in Palos Hills and Bolingbrook. There's lots planned for this week-long celebration, including tasty holiday refreshments, demonstrations, seminars, door prizes, so you can win stuff, so why not go, and perhaps best of all, up to 60% off Christmas decor to help make your holiday celebrations extra special. SIDS has the most extensive selection Christmas and holiday decor in Chicagoland, like over 100 styles of lifelike artificial trees in sizes up to 12 feet. They have dozens of themed decorated trees loaded with thousands of unique collectible ornaments to choose from. They also have beautiful wreaths, garlands, and Christmas arrangements to decorate your home or office, and it's up to 60% off. during Sid's Holiday Preview Open House starting this Friday at 6 p.m. Visit www.sidsonline.com for all the details. Sid's Chicagoland's premier garden center, nursery, and florists are located in Palos Hills and on Southwest Highway in Bolingbrook, almost had it, off of Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Now, every week I talk about how WRD Environmental has led the way as a green business in Chicago. I personally witnessed how they do it yesterday at Mayor Daley's 2010 Landscape Awards ceremony. This program recognizes how people from all walks of life in every neighborhood of this great metropolis work to beautify their worlds by creating and maintaining plots of land, whether they feature flowers, trees, edible crops, or all of the above. It's inspiring to see how individuals and communities alike work to create a better Chicago by putting seeds and plants in the ground and faithfully caring for them, and it's not surprising that each year, WRD Environmental is an official sponsor of this empowering program. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects, use recycled energy-efficient supplies, and sought nature's balance. Simply put, being green is part of their DNA. For experienced sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD. It's contagious. WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. And next week, I'm having the Chicago Gardener of the Year, which is Joy Garden at the Northside College Preparatory High School. My buddy Mike Repkin, who's been on the show before with Urban Habitat Chicago, was part of this. He's bringing a crew down next week for the Gardener of the Year. Let's go real quick into line two and bring in Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you got about a minute and a half here. What's up?
Yeah, I've been able to purchase salvia from the local home center, but when I went on the internet to try to purchase some, it says it's a drug or something. I'm confused.
We should have had Amy to answer this question. Heather found something online, and this is the species she had, Heather?
Well, there's varieties of salvia.
And it says, media stories generally raise alarms over salvia divinorums, legal status, and are sometimes headlined with generally ill-supported comparisons to LSD or other psychoactive substances, which is kind of interesting.
It's also known as diviner sage. Am I saying that right? Maria Pastora or seer sage. So it's not illegal, but it's lumped into that category often because it does have some dissociative effects.
I'd bring up the other screen. Rachel, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel, send me your information so I can track that down and I can give the information out. It would have fit right in with our Wicked Plants, it sounds like, segment earlier. Send me mike@mikenovak.net, and I will track that down and we'll put it on the air next week.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll write back to you first, but we'll talk about it next week, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Great, thanks for calling. That's it. We're out of here. Like I said, Gardener of the Year from Chicago next week. That'll be cool. We're going to talk about recycling with Mike Mitchell from the Illinois Recycling Association. But until then, what do we say?
Go green
or go home. See you next week.